So we're reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, entitled Contents of the Gita Summarized, verse number 23. Please repeat. Nainam chidanti shastrani. Or even Nainam chidanti shastrani. Nainam dahati bhavaka. Na chainam kledayan chapo. Na shoshanti, na shoshati maruta. Nainam chiranti shastani. Nainam dahati bhavaka. Na chainam kledayan chapo. Na shoshayati maruta. Nainam chiranti shastrani. Nainam dahati bhavaka. Na chainam kledayan chapo. Na shoshayati maruta. Nainam chiranti shastrani. Nainam dahati bhavaka. Nainam deklayan japo. Na chainam kledayan japo. Na shoshayati maruta. Nainam chiranti shastrani. Nainam dahati bhavaka. Na chainam kledayan japo. Na shoshayati maruta. Vaishnavi? Nainam chidanti shastrani. Nainam dahati bhavaka. Na chainam kledayan japo. Na shoshayati maruta. Translation. The soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. All kinds of weapons, sword, flame weapons, rain weapons, tornado weapons, etc., are unable to kill the spirit soul. It appears that there are many kinds of weapons made of earth, water, air, and ether, etc., in addition to the modern weapons of fire. Even the nuclear weapons of the modern age are classified as fire weapons, but formerly there were other weapons made of all different types of material element. Firearms were counteracted by water weapons, which are now unknown to modern science. Nor do modern scientists have any knowledge of tornado weapons. Nonetheless, the soul can never be cut to pieces nor annihilated by any number of weapons, regardless of scientific devices. The Mayavadi cannot explain how the individual soul came into existence simply by ignorance and consequently became covered by the illusory energy. Nor was it ever possible to cut the individual souls from the original Supreme Soul. Rather, the individual souls are eternally separated parts of the Supreme Soul. Because they are atomic individual souls eternally, Sanatana, they are prone to be covered by the illusory energy, and thus they become separated from the association with the Supreme Lord, just as sparks of a fire, although one in quality with a fire, are prone to be extinguished when out of the fire. In the Varaha Purana, the living entities are described as separated parts and parcels of the Supreme. They are eternally so, according to the Bhagavad Gita also. So even after being liberated from illusion, the living entity remains a separate identity, as is evident from the teaching of the Lord to Arjuna. Arjuna became liberated by the knowledge received from Krishna, but he never became one with Krishna. Amagana timirandasya gyananjana silakaya chaksuram nimitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha namo om vishnu padaya krishna prastaya bhutale shrimate bhaktivedanta swaminiti namine namaste sarasvati deve gauravani pacharine nivishesha shunyavadi Pasyachadashatarine Vanchakalpakrubhascha Kripa Sindhuvevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, this is my first time ever giving class, so I beg for your mercy and also for your forgiveness. I feel it's a great privilege to be able to speak. But I also feel very unqualified to be among an assembly of such esteemed Bhagavad Gita scholars. I'll admit myself that I'm not so familiar. So please give me your blessings and that I might be able to say something for the benefit of my own purification. And you're also free to leave at any time. Please don't feel inhibited. So, this verse is spoken by Krishna to Arjuna as part of his preliminary instructions of the Gita about the nature of the spirit soul from verses 12 to 30. So, we're just about in the middle of these instructions. I mean, there are so many wonderful topics spoken about in the Bhagavad Gita, but I'll confess that this is one of my favorite sections because it's such essential teachings and expressed in such a poetic way. So in this verse we can see that the soul is non-flammable, water and windproof, but also the point that Srila Prabhupada makes in his purport is it's also resistant to any kind of weapon or elemental weapon, such as was available in ancient times. And the purport is two paragraphs long and it makes two points about the soul's indestructibility even in the face of any kind of weapon, even these sophisticated elemental weapons that modern science no longer understands. But Srila Prabhupada also makes the point that this verse defeats the Mayavadi argument of oneness between the Supreme and Jiva souls, because it's impossible that they could become separated, the soul being uncleavable by any weapon. So we have a nice description of all the different weapons which were available at the time of Krishna, Arjuna, and although we only have fire weapons now, there was like the ability to counteract these weapons with other weapons made from different elements. And there's a very nice narration in the Krishna book where, in the story of Banasura, where Krishna he's actually fighting against Lord Shiva, and it describes how they're skillfully counteracting all these weapons against each other. So for just a bit of context, Banasura was a very great and powerful demon. He was a great fighter. Well, he had 1,000 arms. And that he was also a very great devotee of Lord Shiva, and it's described in the Krishna book that Banasura would please Lord Shiva by playing the drums as accompanying Shiva's dancing with his 1,000 arms, and Lord Shiva became very pleased by this. And Lord Shiva is so obliged to his devotee that when Banasura's capital is attacked by the Yadavas in retribution for him holding Aniruddha, Krishna's grandson, captive, that Lord Shiva takes the side of Banasura and actually fights against his own master. So, excuse me one second. Srila Prabhupada narrates, Lord Shiva then began to release all his selected weapons against the personality of Godhead. Lord Sri Krishna, without any difficulty, counteracted all these weapons with counterweapons. He counteracted the Brahmastra, similar to the atomic bomb, with another Brahmastra, and an air weapon with a mountain weapon. When Lord Shiva released a particular weapon bringing about a violent hurricane on the battlefield, Lord Krishna presented just the opposing element, a mountain weapon, which checked the hurricane on the spot. Similarly, when Lord Shiva released his weapon of devastating fire, Krishna counteracted it with torrents of rain. So in this way, it was a very intense fight with using all these weapons with power compared to nuclear weapons, so you can imagine what this must be like to fight at that level and yet be able to counteract things. In fact, ironically, Krishna overcomes all of Lord Shiva's attacks by Lord Shiva is momentarily distracted and Krishna strikes him with a yawning weapon. He's momentarily deviated and then Krishna releases his yawning weapon and Lord Shiva cannot stop yawning and he's so fatigued he's not able to fight anymore. But even though they had these weapons with this like this incredible strength, still it's not able to destroy the soul or even to slightly affect it. So the second point that Srila Prabhupada makes in the purport is about the soul's eternal individuality. Krishna speaks in verse 12 of this chapter, Natva eham jatu nasam, natvam jane nat janadipa, nachaivam nava vishama, sava vayamata param. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So Srila Prabhupada elaborates in the purport to this verse that this is not just speaking about the soul's eternal nature, but eternal individual nature. The fact that there is the distinction made between the Lord Arjuna and the kings assembled on the battlefield implies that they're individual beyond just the bodily concept. In fact, Srila Prabhupada makes the point that it's this eternal separation between the Supreme Lord and the spirit souls that makes the Bhagavad Gita so valuable, because if it were simply an instruction from one part of the same whole, where would be the value in Krishna's instructions? It's like, imagine trying to go on Sankirtan and distribute a Bhagavad Gita. Like, this is a very interesting conversation between one person. So, the Bhagavad Gita actually loses its significance if we don't have this understanding. So, Dvaitavada philosophy, it's also known as Advaita Vedanta, says that there's only one reality, known as Brahman, and any duality and distinction that we perceive in this world is purely due to illusion. And the soul sees itself as separate because it's in ignorance, but when it overcomes this ignorance, then this illusion that keeps it separate is destroyed, and the soul enters in again. And the term Mayavada means the doctrine of illusion. It's actually Mayavada, it's sort of a derogatory term. You wouldn't hear an Advaitin call himself a Mayavadi. But by this doctrine of illusion, it points out one of the central flaws. Because if it's this illusion that keeps the soul from knowing its Brahman, then Srila Prabhupada says it's implying that Maya is superior to the spiritual energy, which he states in Bhagavad Gita chapter 7 verse 26 in the purport, that this is impossible. Maya Devi, she's the inferior energy of the Lord, so the Lord cannot be subdued by her. But we also have this concept within our tradition that it is possible to enter into the Brahman effulgent. There is this concept of the Brahman effulgence. But it's still not possible, even if the soul desires and reaches the Brahman effulgence. It still keeps its individual identity. And Srila Prabhupada actually speaks in one of his classes that the soul can enter into Brahman, but he says he cannot stay in the Brahman effulgent for many days. It's just a matter of days before the soul becomes frustrated, because the soul is naturally seeking pleasure, and that is only found in variety. So he cannot find any satisfaction in the Brahman effulgent, therefore he has to come back. And Srila Prabhupada further gives the analogy in chapter 18, verse 55 of the Bhagavad Gita, that it's like if a green bird enters into a green tree, then it appears like there's some sort of merging, they're the same colour, but still the bird is distinct from the tree, the bird doesn't become part of the tree. And Srila Prabhupada further elaborates in this verse that the word viṣṣate, enters into me, is not talking about becoming homogeneous with Brahman, but in fact entering into the Lord's abode. So the green bird may enter into the green tree, but he comes there to enjoy the fruits. And he also gives the analogy that the impersonalists say is like the individual souls merging with Brahman are like rivers flowing into an ocean. But Srila Prabhupada says that the personalist, he knows that there are so many aquatic living entities within the ocean. And this is explained very nicely in the instruction, in the introduction to the Nectar of Devotion. So I'd like to read this passage. Let us offer our respectful obeisances to all the great devotees and acharyas, holy teachers, who are compared to sharks in the great ocean of nectar, and who do not care for the various rivers of liberation. Impersonalists are very fond of merging into the Supreme, like rivers that come down and merge into the ocean. The ocean can be compared to liberation, and the rivers to all different paths of liberation. The impersonalists are dwelling in the river water, which eventually comes to mix with the ocean. They have no information, however, that within the ocean, as within the river, there are innumerable aquatic living entities. The sharks who dwell in the ocean do not care for the rivers that are gliding down into it. The devotees eternally live in the ocean of devotional service, and they do not care for the rivers. In other words, those who are pure devotees always remain in the ocean of transcendental loving service to the Lord, and have no business with other processes which are compared to the rivers that only gradually come to the ocean. So in this way, the living entity is always eternally separate, as stated in Bhagavad Gita 15.7, the living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. And Srila Prabhupada writes that in this verse, the identity of the living being is clearly given. The living entity is the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord eternally. It is not that he assumes individuality in conditioned life, and his liberated stage becomes one of the Supreme Lord. He is eternally fragmented. I remember when I first became interested in spiritual life as such, a sort of preliminary explorations which didn't get me very far when I was 13, but I remember reading a book on Buddhism, and they were talking about how when one attains nirvana, the identity is lost. And I remember I was sort of, yeah, I guess I was afraid by this. It just seemed so strange that you would lose your identity. But I thought, well, I don't have any way to say this is what happens or is this not what happens. Thankfully, I do now, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and his books and all his devotees. But I remember thinking, if ultimately we have no identity, if there isn't this identity in the emancipated state, where does this individuality come from? Because it seemed to me it was a more complex thing to be an individual than a nothing. So how does this come about? And I remember thinking this, that, you know, the individuality is an eternal part of the soul, so we cannot give this up. But also, even though we are always individual, and even though we attain liberation and go to the Lord's abode, and we're always individual, always eternal servitors, there is also this concept of oneness. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to chapter 15, verse 16, that those who are in oneness with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, are called infallible. But he further writes, oneness does not mean they have no individuality, but there is no disunity. So we can, there is a oneness with the Lord, but it's not a oneness in being, but a oneness in purpose. To become one with the Lord is to follow his instruction, to serve him, to see to his comfort rather than to our own. We have this As Srila Prabhupada writes earlier in the purport, we are like sparks in the fire. So by quality, the sparks are the same as the fire. But in quantity, like they're insignificant. But even though we have this oneness in quality, there's also, on the liberated platform, one has this oneness with desire. And there's a very nice passage in Krishna book, chapter 23, the delivering of the wives of the brahmanas who perform sacrifices, wherein it describes that the wives of the brahmanas, they took Krishna into their hearts and they began to embrace him in this way. They felt that they were merging. And Srila Prabhupada writes that it should be noted in this connection that when Krishna entered into the wives' hearts and when they embraced him and felt the transcendental bliss of being merged with him, the Supreme Lord Krishna did not lose his identity, nor did the individual wives lose theirs. The individuality of both the lords and the wives remained, yet they felt oneness in existence. When a lover submits to his lover without any pinch of personal consideration, that is called oneness. Lord Chaitanya has taught us this feeling of oneness in his Shikshastika. Krishna may act freely, doing whatever he likes, but the devotee should always be in oneness or in agreement with his desires. So, in conclusion, we can see that the soul is indestructible even in the face of so many powerful weaponry. And Srila Prabhupada also makes the point in one of his classes, which I hadn't thought of, but when he said it, it was like, oh yeah, that knowing this, because it's the Hindu system of cremation, so we know that the soul is not destroyed by cremation. But I think the main point of the verse and purport is this eternal distinction which allows us to be the servitor of the Lord. But also we can experience unity by making Krishna our sole purpose. Then Srila Prabhupada writes that this is the real unity, and it cannot be achieved in the material world. He describes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, Verse 8, that even though there are so many attempts to bring unity in this world, such as the United Nations, all these attempts for unity, they're frustrated because all these nations, they have their own personal national ambitions. They're looking for something to gain. But in Krishna consciousness, it's not about gain. It's about serving. And Srila Prabhupada says that in Krishna consciousness, there cannot be two options. There is only one goal, to serve Krishna to the best of one's ability. It even makes the nice comment that even in this platform of even on the highest spiritual platform, there may even be disagreement on how to serve the Lord. But this principle of serving the Lord is still there, and thus Srila Prabhupada writes, those who are actually engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead cannot be disunited at any circumstance. So, that's what I've prepared. Any comments, questions, queries, corrections, chastisements? Okay. Well, they believe that we see distinction because of illusion, but then because there is no distinction, again, this illusion is not real in itself. And so, I think, as far as I can remember, so it's the material energy, Maya, that keeps the soul and Brahman from being together, and this ignorance is described. Like, they give the analogy of the rope and the snake. Like, if one sees a rope on the ground at night and thinks it's a snake, then one might be afraid, but when one realizes it's a rope, then the fear is gone. But was there ever really a snake? Well, not really. It seemed that way. You were convinced in that way. Was a snake, but when you overcome your ignorance, then the snake disappears. How did the soul fall from Brahman?
They say they cannot explain how the soul can exist in simple by ignorance. So how do they, what is their theory existing? What is their theory exactly? They say the soul comes into existence by ignorance.
I don't think have that good a grip of. No. Yes, it's very cryptic. Thank you, Charles.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult to recognize the Maya body because it is safe. We don't really think that we come into being by ignorance. We are just here, and then, you know, we are actually in one sense like united. It depends, because like the Kashmir Shaivites, like who are like impersonalists, they think that this is all like part of India, and that we actually like, you know, merge into God, and then we become God, and this separation is actually only part of India. So there is actually no ignorance in the world of this. I think I just
read it wrong, because what Prabhupada is explaining here, I can see it now, is that it's basically our philosophy, that the soul comes here to be by ignorance, right? And consequently, we can cover by the way through ignorance. If that's what the whole verse is about, that we're a small part of what we're explaining, and then it comes comfort. So and he's explaining, but they can't really explain it. But they're saying, oh, it was always, I don't know exactly, but they're always an ignorance of something like that, you know. And like you said, with the rock and the snake, that's one of the examples they give. That you just have to realize that it's a rock and then everything's alive. But here in this sentence, Prabhupada explains that they can't really explain it. And he also, I think the later example, he also explains that if there is the idea of a snake, you must also be a snake somewhere. Not just an illusion, it's not just an idea, but there is actually a snake. So similarly, we do talk from the spiritual world. But they love the sex and they know it. So I just get it from my mind.
The mind body is the same, that we are actually all one, but we just came into existence by ignorance. But we're saying we were always separate. But they're saying we became separate by ignorance. But they can't explain how that happened. That's what Prabhupada is saying. So we say we were always separate. We were always a soul. And the mind body is saying, no, previously we were all one. Then we got separated by this ignorance. Later we will again become one. But how we became separated, how we became a soul, by ignorance, this they can't explain. They say that they have no proof of it. And we say, no, we were always separated.
Thank you very much. I think it's time for Vajans, right? I'm sorry, I was so
so is it all right?